Welcome to episode 3 of whatever the fuck we end up calling this podcast.
Whatever calling names this podcast.
Yeah. That still doesn't have music or a title.
Or a purpose.
Conversely, it has more preparation than any single episode of the main show that I do.
See, I don't know if that's a compliment or an insult.
It's a compliment, buddy. We were talking about it last week. Well, who knows when this goes up.
The last time you were talking to Colin?
Yeah. And I'm like, bro, we've done the 2 best episodes on our feed. You're not even on. Because every other episode is just me and Colin sitting down and jibber-jabbering at each other with really no direction and no purpose.
Well, we're trying not to get canceled here.
Well, I don't know about that.
Oh, right. I forgot about those other episodes we did.
Yeah.
There's a lot of differently abled things happening on Twitter today.
Yeah. Well, Twitter's a fucking nightmare.
But I did look on Twitter while I was coming over here.
Well, hit me up.
So, Stardom is doing a cyberbullying angle.
Naturally.
It hasn't even been a year since Hannah killed herself, so maybe we shouldn't do that.
Maybe that's why they're doing it, to show
also,
how bad
maybe they're
it
doing
is.
It.
It's like an awareness thing?
No, they're just doing it to get heat.
All right. Well, I mean, they're Japan. They kind of don't care.
It is working. It's getting Momo over.
Well, there you go, then.
The side topic is it tasteful? And it's wrestling, so no.
No.
No, it's not tasteful.
No, it's not. Of course it's not. Talking about a sport where Vince McMahon called a man the N-word on TV.
Yeah. And it wasn't the 80s.
Yeah.
And which doesn't really make it better.
That was the mid-2000s.
But it was not that long ago.
Didn't Stone Cold Steve Austin do a wife-beating angle with his wife who he had been beating?
Did he? I don't...
I think he had kind of an abusive gimmick going on with Deborah.
But was it Macho Man style, where it was... Well, it was pretty obvious, but it wasn't blit?
I think so.
Okay.
Except for he was actually beating her in real life at that particular time. So
yeah, wrestling is trash.
Yeah, wrestling is... wrestling is bad, and it's for bad people. And that's why I love it so much.
This explains a lot.
We're the right audience. So what do you got for us today, Andy? What are we doing?
I think we're going to talk about my favorite matches not updated for this year.
All right. So your top, we're going 25, or did you just bring 10? You did the whole 25?
I have the whole 25.
This will probably get split into 2 episodes.
Well, goddamn.
Counting down from 25.
Yeah, you're going to like this one.
All right. Let's get right into it. Andy's 25th favorite match of all time.
The Rock versus Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania.
WrestleMania was at 18?
18.
That was a great fucking match.
Yeah. Ironically, it should probably be higher, but, you know, I can't help but get people. I can't help but get heat with everybody.
That's fine. your Japanese love heat.
Oh, they'll be mad too, because there'll be too much Attitude Era at WWF also.
Oh, there can never be too much of that.
Well,
let me tell you why that match was so good. Let me tell the listeners why that match was so good. So going into it, Hulk Hogan had just returned to WWF for the first time since like 1992 or 3, whenever he jumped ship to WCW. He's coming in as his NWO heel character, really villaining it up.
The best Hogan.
I mean,
I don't even know if that picked up on the mic. I just wanted to put it in there.
I was trying to explain to somebody the other day how, like, you're young enough that you don't remember Hogan as a good guy.
No, because even my memories of him as a good guy is just him being a bad guy.
But I mean, like, the shock of NWO Hogan wasn't the same to you because that's just who he always was to you.
No, I was just like, wait, these guys are pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So you kind of missed, you have a different cultural take on that than I do, which is kind of a neat thing. So Hogan comes into the WWF as a full-on villain, and Rock is like peak Rock babyface at the time, like height of his career, on fire. And so they're feuding, except this WrestleMania took place in Canada, which in wrestling is backwards land. Like, they never do what they're supposed to do in Canada. So they started booing the shit out of The Rock and chanting Rocky sucks and cheering for Hulk Hogan. So halfway through the match, they kind of like Hogan going in was the heel, but halfway through the match, Hogan starts doing all his face spots and hulking up and playing to the crowd and doing his hand things. And the Rock starts acting like, you know, heel Rock and really being a prick. And
also the best Rock.
Also the best Rock. And really playing to the crowd, since the crowd wanted it the other way. They just like, fuck it, and played to the crowd in the other way. And it really made that match magical.
That is the reason it's on here.
Yeah.
I frankly don't even remember anything of the match other than the turn.
I mean, the match is the Rock who is fine and has fun spots.
It's a double turn and it's a non-planned double turn live.
Right. It's that match is amazing because it's two guys who, while not necessarily the best like technical wrestlers, they both got their moves and look great doing them. The Rock especially just makes everything look magic.
But is there a more perfect Attitude Era wrestler than The Rock?
No, I guess there isn't. But my point is, what makes them special is more their, like, they really know that wrestling
they
isn't
read
about
the
match.
And they reacted to it.
Which is, I think, a thing that's really missing in
both
modern wrestling.
Both of them actively.
Actively. In the match, they like, well.
Not just one of them, they both actively at the same time.
Because they're the two best crowd workers in the history of the business.
Well, they're probably going to be the last.
I mean, it's because they don't work the like. Even if there is
well,
a crowd,
there isn't even a crowd to work.
Even when there is a crowd, modern wrestlers just don't. They're out there doing their spots and getting their spots in, no matter what the crowd's doing or saying. And I don't like how they just don't care about the crowd in wrestling anymore. And you'd think that'd be a Vince McMahon thing, because Vince actively hates the crowd for not going along with his plans.
I am afraid that now he just doesn't want a crowd because he has total control.
Oh, 100%.
And that makes me sad because I want NXT house shows.
That's, yeah. But AEW does the same thing. Like, they don't give a shit what their crowd says either.
But I just think they don't know. I think Vince actually knows. I think Vince knows. He just doesn't.
Yeah. Well, Vince actively doesn't want to do what his crowd, but like right. AEW, like
AEW isn't smart enough to know what the crowd wants. And Vince is such an asshole. He doesn't want to do.
See, I don't think that's true, because as soon as fucking Hangman Adam Page started getting over instead of the Young Bucks, they crushed his drive. So they're Vince McMahoning it. And it bothers me.
So the Vince McMahon alternative is also Vince McMahon.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of my problem. It's not just a Vince McMahon problem. It's a modern wrestling problem. It's across country. It's across company.
Across companies. It's across just, continents.
It's just the way modern wrestling is booked now. Is just why is the crowd? The crowd doesn't have an opinion. Just go out there and do your spots, no matter how the crowd reacts. Raise Roman Reigns' hand and pretend
but
he's the good guy.
But I think some crowds don't have an opinion. I'm not being snarky. I actually think some crowds don't.
That's fair.
Which isn't a compliment or insult. I just think some crowds are just there to see some wrestling.
That's fine too, but
is it?
No.
It takes the drive out of it. It takes the mojo out of the whole thing.
Yeah, I agree. Man, go watch. Anybody who's listening to this, go watch.
Peacock hasn't murdered it yet. Go watch it.
Go watch any 90s, like late, like 98, 99 wrestling when either The Rock or Stone Cold's music hits.
Oh, just to pop from the music.
The Stone Cold's glass will hit, and you'll just never hear a fucking crowd react like that.
From the glass breaking before the roof blows off the
before
arena.
The crowd drowns out any other sound entirely.
I don't think we're ever going to get that pop again.
No.
At least not in a long time.
The only way we'll get it is if we have a full crowd and CM Punk comes out. You're going to get that pop for him.
I don't disagree with you, but I don't think between Punk being Punk.
Yeah, no, of course not. But like if AEW's ever doing a Chicago show and cons him to do a one thing.
If AEW can't manage to get him to do it, because I think they will throw money at him.
Yeah.
And I think that is what he wants a company to be.
Yeah, and then license
bad.
And then licenses Cult of Personality because Vince doesn't own that.
I mean, they licensed the Tarzan song, so why not?
Right.
And the Pixies.
Tony Khan clearly
Tony
isn't
Khan's
above
throwing,
throwing money away. And that's why number 25, Hulk Hogan versus The Rock. This is why this has to be a two-parter. We're 10 minutes in and we've gotten through number 25.
You're gonna have no opinion on this last one.
Perfect.
Suzu Suzuki versus Sayori Ano at Ribbon Mania last year. Just because I'm obsessed with this young girl being able to wrestle good.
Ribbon Mania is the third popular women's wrestling?
Yep.
Okay, in Japan?
Ice Ribbon is the third, and they call it Ribbon Mania because wrestling is trashy and ripping people off.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, is that where all the throwing ribbons in the ring shit comes from? Or do they name it after that?
Well, that's been around for decades, but
okay.
I believe they named it Ice Ribbon because of ribbons.
Okay. So in Japan,
their use of English is very unique and creative.
That's fair, yeah.
Like, we're going to pick up on this particular word and use it.
Right. In Japan, like, during big matches or, like, respectful matches or whatever, everybody in the crowd chucks ribbons, like, streamers into the ring.
Which is fun.
At the start of the match. It's a great gimmick.
Until Ring of Honor does it and just overdoes it.
Right. You can't do it for every match or it loses its meaning.
Or everybody have an ass load of ribbons.
Right. And,
you know, no one cares.
Right. It's like the equivalent of, you know, when the Huskers get their first score and all the balloons go up. Throw the ribbons.
Right, but if you did it every touchdown. Well, yeah. Now it'd still be a surprise because we don't get any. But
well, I mean, yeah, you're going to do it every touchdown. It's just that once.
but back in the day, it ruined it.
Right.
All right, 23. You're gonna hate this.
Am I?
Shinsuke Nakamura.
Yeah.
Versus AJ Styles. Wrestle Kingdom 10.
I'm going to have to tell you, because let me tell you what I know about those two gentlemen.
Facial expressions?
Yeah. So Shinsuke Nakamura is a Japanese who's like the biggest fucking name to come out of Japan.
To actually leave.
Yeah, in forever. Like, since fucking the Great Muta, I don't know. He's a huge fucking Japanese star. Like, he's the only Japanese star I knew the fucking name of before seeing them on WWF TV.
And I respect you for consistently hating him.
And he's fucking all, like, he's...
I like your consistent... You're at least consistent on hating him.
He's terrible. Like, he can wrestle, I guess. But it's not interesting to see.
I mean, you at least respect AJ in the ring.
Yeah. AJ's boring as shit, but he's a fantastic technical worker. And he's got beautiful fucking hair. And he doesn't get it greasy and wet. It's just dry and perfect, and like a L'Oreal commercial.
Which he actually should be in a L'Oreal commercial.
Yeah.
Since gender isn't a thing anymore.
And a minivan.
But
I could see that match being great, especially in Japan when they just let him go. 25 minutes of,
you know, murdering each other for 25 minutes.
Because as much as I fucking hate Shinsuke Nakamura, he can wrestle. And yeah, against a guy like AJ, who's, I think their styles would match really well.
And it's, the match isn't built off of personality.
Right.
It's just, I want that belt.
Yeah.
Okay.
Shit, I might go watch that match.
All right. Shuri versus Kana / Asuka.
All right.
Since there's two Asukas now.
You're going to have to explain this one all on your own.
It's from, I'm not sure if it's Rina or Rihanna. From December 26, 2014.
All right.
Just them murdering each other.
Yeah. Again.
I believe it's 10 or 12 minutes.
Yeah.
And they're just murdering each other. And I love it. They're just suplexing and kicking and trying to murder each other.
I know Kana, who is known as Asuka in the WWE, she's amazing. She is one of my favorite women wrestlers of all time. She's just a fucking badass.
And when she's fired up,
yeah,
it's magical.
Yeah.
Which we don't see nearly enough of on main roster Asuka.
That's a fact. And when she fucking lays her work in, so everything she does looks like she's just kicking the shit out of people.
And Shuri is one of her proteges. Once Io and Mio, you know, broke off and became big girls. She took in Shuri and Shida.
So this is like a...
So they know each other. They train together, and
it's like an Obi-Wan Kenobi, Darth Vader thing.
Kinda, except unfortunately, this company is a terrible small company, and no one saw it.
That's a bummer.
So it was a great,
yeah.
It works great. They're laying it in.
I mean, Asuka, I bet, especially like Japanese, like in Japan, Asuka, like because NXT Asuka was fucking incredible to watch.
And that was toned down.
Yeah, so I bet Japanese Asuka was a real treat.
I mean, it's nice to see her personality in a way.
Yeah.
But also, we lost the mystique of her...
Yeah.
Just being an enigma.
Enigma?
Yes.
All right.
And just coming out and laying shit in.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah. Her dancing on Raw is not working for me.
Yeah.
It's funny once, you get to, oh yeah, you got person, haha, okay.
Yeah.
Could
you win some matches now? I guess she has been champion most of the last year.
But yeah, but that doesn't
mean
she's winning.
That's fucking true.
All right.
It's definitely picking up the train sounds, but you know what? You know,
I like trains.
So I think that's perfect.
Yeah.
The only thing Andy likes more than Japanese women wrestling is trains.
You know, there is a woman wrestler who also likes trains.
Yeah.
And her gimmick is basically she's a train.
Oh, her and Braun Strowman should team up.
Her gimmick is that she wants to be a conductor, but for some reason is a wrestler.
Perfect.
And a wannabe idol.
That is some mid-90s WWF shit.
Like, I know I love trains and stuff, but I'm going to be an idol slash wrestler.
Look how this train is lit up. Sorry to completely derail this thing.
Oh, that's a rail grinder.
What the fuck is that?
That's a rail grinder.
What's a rail grinder?
It literally is grinding the top of the rail.
Oh, neat.
That's how they keep it from, you know, being fucked up.
And so why is it all lit up like that?
Because there's like different sections or something. I don't know. I don't work on it.
Huh.
But it's like a big snake looking thing.
I've never seen a train go by that was all lit up like that. Sorry to get distracted. Leaving all that in.
Welcome to train talk.
Yeah. I mean, if you ever want to do an episode just about your favorite trains.
Don't start.
All right. What number are we on?
21. Io Shirai, Tam Nakano versus Kagetsu and Natsu Sumire in an exploding baseball bat match.
Okay, so how is it like baseball bat wrapped in barbed wire with
no?
The, okay,
explain it's a me baseball an ex- bat that has electrodes on it.
Okay,
and then you have to fight to the ring post, hit a button to turn it on.
Okay,
and then the electricity is on, and you can hit a person with it.
All right,
it's terrible.
So is the bat plugged in?
Literally,
like to an extension cord.
Yes. So it's kind of terrible.
Yeah.
But also, I love it.
Yeah, that sounds ridiculous.
Because it's ridiculous.
Is there like pyro in the bat so you know when
bit.
It gets
like it throws off a huge spark.
Okay.
But it's also ridiculous.
Yeah, but that's great. That's some great fucking shitty.
And Io takes the first hit of the bat.
Yeah.
I think about 10 minutes in, they tease it forever.
Right, like you do.
And they go
match.
And they pour water on her and they carry her to the back and they sell the hell out of this.
Love it.
And then 3/4 of the way of the match, she comes back out
right.
And does the Roman Reigns gimmick of...
Yeah.
So it's all just... It's done well, but...
Nice.
It's only on here because of the gimmick.
Of course. That's a that's a fun gimmick. That is one I've never seen. I might have to
like,
go
it's
look
ridiculous.
Up a...
Wait. So we have to fight to the ring post to turn his bat off.
Right.
And if you hit it again, it turns off.
Naturally.
So it's basically a bull rope mat or not a... It's a flag match with an exploding baseball bat.
Right.
That you can easily accidentally unplug.
Sure. That's a great gimmick match. I like everything about it.
And they've only done it once, so they haven't ruined it.
I mean, it probably was just a whole fucking, like a nightmare. Just a fucking...
Oh, you can imagine trying to rig up these extension cords. And
right.
There's probably not a proper outlet because no one...
What a fucking pain in the ass.
Right. And then you got to be afraid someone's going to fucking trip over a cord and unplug
right.
this stupid thing.
Right. Or actually get shocked to death.
Or it'll actually work too well.
what a dumb match.
But it was fun.
Sure.
And it's unlike Hell in a Cell, they don't do it 5 times a year.
Yeah. Yeah. Or in one pay-per-view.
And while we're doing gimmick matches, Terry Funk versus Cactus Jack. You want to guess where?
I'm going to guess the main event, the fucking King of the Death tournament.
Yeah.
Okay. So
I can let you go on this one.
Yeah. So there's a wrestler most people know as Mankind. Maybe you know him as Mick Foley. If you watch a lot of wrestling, you probably know him as Cactus Jack. The hardcore legend. If you're an internet memester, you know him as the guy who The Undertaker threw off the top of the Hell in the Cell in 1998.
Don't buy that.
Yeah, don't buy an NFT of anything. But Mick Foley, a.k.a. Cactus Jack, is one of the fucking greatest professional wrestlers of all time and one of the craziest and just most willing to beat himself up wrestlers in the history of the business. Like, one of his...
I have no disagreement with any of that.
One of his best friends and mentor... is a professional wrestler who's, I'd say, heyday was the 70s.
Are we talking about Funk?
Yeah.
Oh, I'd say 70s, yeah.
Yeah.
And then he just refused to leave.
Yeah.
But somehow in a positive way.
Yeah, he's this old man named Terry Funk who never really made it big in any of the promotions. I think his biggest push
is in Japan.
His biggest push in WWF was in a tag team with Cactus Jack as Chainsaw Charlie.
Yeah, with pantyhose over his head.
With pantyhose over his head and a chainsaw. And he came out of a box. But
this was all great in 1998. Was that 99, 98?
Yeah, somewhere in there.
It was great. It was great. It sounds goofy, but it was great.
But the man is a legend in both the South and Japan, like in his own right. Like, he's a name that everybody in the business knows. He's not a huge, like, crossover mainstream star, Terry Funk. But if you're a wrestling fan, Terry Funk is a fucking legend.
If you watch him, you'll at least appreciate his work.
Yeah. And he's also as crazy as Mick Foley. So they're in Japan in this thing called the Death Tournament. That's just a series of hardcore death matches where they replace the ropes with barbed wire.
And not all the same either. They're all completely different gimmicks that are equally painful.
Glass matches, thumbtack matches, mm-hmm. barbed wire ring matches. The main event being an exploding ring, barbed wire mesh, exploding panels. So there's these...
Plywood
with C4 and razor wire on them that when you get body slammed onto, they explode. And
I mean, you can't see how anything could go wrong.
Yeah. And the ring ropes have all been replaced completely with barbed wire. And it's just a fucking, there's fucking barbed wire wrapped baseball bats. For some reason, there's a ladder involved in this match in the middle of it.
I don't know why.
Just a gruesome. Mick Foley's getting cooked alive. Fucking by the end of the match, both of their faces are just completely fucking red with blood. Just an absolute fucking shit show violence. This is how Mick Foley became like a well-known superstar, is winning this match.
And then he had to go to WF and not get injured.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't say his life got much easier from there on.
He could have just been a normal wrestler.
No.
And not get hurt anymore, but yeah. No,
he leaned all the way into it. So the best way to watch this match, though, in my opinion, is in a bootleg version called ICP's Stranglemania, with the Insane Clown Posse doing commentary over it. And it's fucking hilarious, and the match is brutal. And it's probably on YouTube, and you should definitely go watch the King of the Death Tournament or Stranglemania.
I got no objection to that.
Yeah.
I watched Stranglemania. And then if you actually like it, watch the serious version, but watch the Stranglemania version first.
I think Stranglemania is a good way to get people into Japanese death tournaments just because they're so fucking funny. And that fucking match is just fucking great.
You're going to hate the next one.
All right. What number are we on?
19.
Number 19.
Goldberg versus Hulk Hogan, where Goldberg wins the title.
I hate that that's above Mick Foley versus...
I question it myself, but when I decided I'm putting it there because of the reaction.
It could have been number 25.
It could have been, but I love that reaction.
What, that they cheered?
The Georgia Dome. The way the Georgia Dome popped for a Georgia-ass...
Goldberg. All right.
And I was a kid.
Yeah. So Hulk Hogan, everybody knows who Hulk Hogan is. This is the height of his NWO heel run. They bring in this guy named Bill Goldberg. Bill Goldberg's an ex-football player. He's a shit wrestler. But he's got this great look.
He's got half of a great look.
He looks like a monster.
He's got those traps.
He's got these traps that are fucking like the Twin Towers on his shoulders. He's got the best fucking entrance music ever. Just like the Terminator theme,
which is better than all of his matches.
Yeah.
The security guards hit the door and they do the gladiator-esque entrance.
He's got fucking sparklers, like just the whole stage is of light with sparklers, and he's breathing smoke. And it's just like one of the most epic entrances in wrestling history. And everybody in the crowd is chanting, Goldberg. And then he comes out and he does literally two moves and wins a match. And that's all he does. That's his entire fucking repertoire. He wins like 100 matches in a row. He's undefeated.
See, as a kid,
booking-wise, it's brilliant. I get why everybody loved Goldberg. I get why it worked.
I residually still like him just because of remembering as a kid.
I fucking hate Bill Goldberg. But do you know what happens every time he comes out?
You pop?
I fucking pop. So I'm like, Goldberg! He's the fucking worst. I can't stand him. He's fucking garbage, but goddamn it works. It works every single time. He comes to the ring. He fucking does his two moves on Brock Lesnar and beats Brock Lesnar. And I'm on my feet cheering like a fucking idiot. Great. It was perfect.
Like, oh my God, he just beat Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, he just fucking...
Look at him!
He just fucking squashed Brock Lesnar with his two shitty moves.
the same two shitty moves that no one's figured out how to counter in 30 years.
and he lays in the spear like nobody else in the business has ever laid in a spear.
Because I think he just spears people.
Yeah, he does. He knocks himself out when he misses because he's a fucking idiot. He's the worst wrestler ever. I hate Bill Goldberg, but goddamn, every time they drag his fucking carcass out.
I think you just defined why this match is actually in this spot.
So he's
because as much as we all creatively understand that he's terrible.
Yeah, it's great. So he's so in the time in WCW at the time, Hulk Hogan and the New World Order had been running roughshod over all of WCW. Which like any time Hogan came close to losing, he had a fucking 100 dudes jump in the ring and beat the shit out of everybody.
That didn't work. He has a taser.
Yeah, he just cheats and cheats and cheats. And so they got this hero now, Bill Goldberg, this unstoppable fucking monster who finally just comes in and fucking takes Hulk Hogan down and finally puts the NWO in their place and regains the WCW title for WCW.
And the crowd's on fire.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I even like it because I like the NWO more.
Because you can't not cheer for... You can't pop for Goldberg, man.
Just electricity even through the TV as a child.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, this is magical.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, this is great.
Because that is wrestling booking done perfectly.
Like, the match is
terrible. Yeah.
The match is not good.
No,
nothing. The best spot in the match is when DDP comes out and Carmelo Malone does a diamond cutter.
Yeah. Carmelo Malone.
So the match itself is terrible, but the emotion and
but Bill Goldberg
pageantry
is Bill fucking Goldberg.
Hey.
He's the 90s version of the Ultimate Warrior, who was my favorite wrestler ever, so I get it.
So it's just on there for the pop.
Yeah.
And so it's the next match.
Number what?
18.
All right.
Dead Man Returns versus Kane.
Hey. You know why I'm on board with this one?
Yep.
I was there. Let me paint you guys a picture. I like how you just read a thing and then I go on a fucking hour-long speech.
Is that the best way to do this?
Probably. But this one I can really talk about because it's the year 2004. Somewhere around here I have a mug with the exact date, but I'm not getting up to find it.
I believe it is March 14th.
That sounds right. I mean, I can get the mug. It's right over here. Oh, is it just more trains?
Yes.
This one's not lit up, though.
I think this is a regular train.
Yeah, it's very loud. Oh, it's going the other way.
Welcome back to Train Talk.
I'm sorry, there's just fucking a million trains going, and Andy doesn't want to run up the hill with me and fucking train surf on one of them.
Well, that part is wrong. I've already broken my leg on that hill before.
That's fair. So, The Undertaker has been the Biker Taker for like 2 years at this point.
Was it a whole 2 years?
Yeah, it was a long time. He was the Biker Taker for a long fucking time.
Well, see, as a child, I was kind of okay with it.
Yeah.
And I still appreciate it because you can't go back to the dead man if he doesn't.
Right. I mean, I loved the Biker Taker at the time, too. I'm not going to shit on it. Like, I shit on it in retrospect.
Well, I know what you want to do.
Well, yeah. I want him back.
No, I know you want the Limp Bizkit bit.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep rolling, rolling, rolling.
Yeah.
Which is a terrible song for a badass.
Yeah. So is fucking American Badass.
Who comes out to Limp fucking Bizkit.
But, you know, he's the Undertaker. So the Undertaker can do anything and you're going to fucking be like, well, he's the Undertaker. Yeah. But he's been this Biker Taker character for a couple years and then fucking Kane kills him.
Literally.
Literally murders him. And so he's off TV.
Buries him alive.
Yeah. He's off TV for 6 months. And then, like, he, you know, crazy things start happening. So, The Undertaker's coming back at WrestleMania to fight Kane. And they keep teasing, like, his old gimmick, his dead man gimmick, his fucking...
He's coming.
Yeah. And then WrestleMania. There I am. WrestleMania 20.
Paint this picture.
I'm in the crowd, buddy. Let me tell you.
You're in the garden.
I'm in Madison Square Garden. WrestleMania 20, the fucking home of WWF, the iconic home of fucking wrestling in the North, sitting there. Great fucking seats, man. Like, first bleachers, dead ass, fucking hard camera looking right at me.
I've seen it.
It's fucking beautiful. I'm like, oh my God. You know, the fucking lights go out.
Like, is this a ploy? Are we really going to do this?
You got to consider, next to the, so after the Ultimate Warrior, The Undertaker became my favorite fucking wrestler ever. Like, the fucking goth gimmick, it was just like 1990, I was 10 years old, perfect age. I loved everything about him.
Got purple gloves and shit.
Yeah, I wanted to wear a fedora just to be The Undertaker, even though I was retarded looking. I'm sorry, I was differently abled looking.
Getting canceled again.
I learned to fucking roll my eyeballs up into my head.
Did you slowly learn that just to be like The Undertaker?
Yeah, yes. Love it. Ever since The Undertaker debuted, I spent like the rest of my life trying to, you know, roll my eyes up into my head until I could do it. Just because I wanted to be The Undertaker as a kid. Like my entire KWF, everybody in the KWF was just Undertaker gimmicks.
I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to be Undertaker or Stone Cold, so what do you want?
Yeah. So the lights go out. Bong! That fucking bell hits.
The Paul Bearer part pops me.
Yeah.
Just seeing Paul, even though he looked like he was already going to have a heart attack just walking out there, just him coming out.
The fucking funeral dirge starts playing. Purple and blue lights come up. Lightning's fucking going all over the Titantrons.
Got the druids.
Got the fucking druids. And then here comes the Undertaker in his fucking dead man black fucking trench coat and way too big of a fucking top hat. Just a brim that goes out fucking 20 feet.
White as his shoulders.
Yes, man. Just this fucking 20-foot circumference brim on his ridiculous fucking hat. Oh.
But it's wonderful.
This dude, I had, like, I can still remember that, like, the fucking smile I had on my face that whole fucking entrance, because I hadn't seen it in years.
And they did it.
And they did it. And I got to, and
they
I
did the most hyped version.
And I hadn't seen that music live. I don't think I ever got to see him enter to that music live. If I did, it had been years and years ago, because he had gone through like 7 or 8 different entrance themes since then.
Yeah, the more metal.
He had the rock and roll theme.
Themes.
Yeah, and then he went into his Limp Bizkit and fucking.
And Kid Rock.
And Kid Rock, and then the. And I'm like.
You're doing it now.
I felt like I was fucking 10 years old again. At Survivor Series, which is my favorite pay-per-view, 1990. And here comes the fucking Undertaker, my childhood favorite wrestler, to his child, my childhood favorite gimmick, to his original entrance music, Paul Bearer at his side. And it was fucking perfect. Like, I don't remember anything about the match.
It was fine.
The match doesn't matter.
I mean, it was fine. The gimmick where Kane was, like, touching him to see if he's actually real or not is wonderful.
God, I'm going to watch that tonight.
But, I mean, it wasn't.
I have that on DVD.
It wasn't a fantastic...
But just the Undertaker coming back as that gimmick after so long...
After his brother murdered him again.
Yeah. God, what a great moment. What a great fucking moment. That's probably my favorite match on here so far.
All right. 17. Stone Cold versus Dude Love over the Edge 98.
All right. You're going to have to... I mean, I know the both... So Dude Love, just a quick background... Is also Mick Foley.
He probably should be my Cactus favorite wrestler because he makes a lot of appearances on this fucking list.
Yeah. For a while. So the Dude Love thing is when Mick Foley was a kid, he used to like do cut wrestling promos on video camera. Like he had a video camera, like basically backyard wrestling shit in the fucking 80s, I guess. 70s.
Oh, yeah, it'd have been the 80s.
And.
Because I remember, I'm reading the book right now.
Yeah. His childhood gimmick was Dude Love. It was like,
it was a Lothario.
Yeah.
He's literally HBK.
Yeah. So for a while in the WWF, Vince is like, yeah, fuck it. Go be Dude Love. That'll be funny. So he went from being Mankind, who like wore a fucking leather face mask and pulled his hair out and squealed.
Yeah, so the shitty button-up shirt. And
yeah.
Just like a... Low-rent psychopath.
Well, even before the button-up shirt was just the weird leather, leather uniform with the Ankh on it.
Yeah. Now there's a dog barking.
Is there a dog barking?
Yes.
Who the fuck has a dog outside at this hour?
Well,
hold on. I'm going to pause this. I'm going to actually professionally edit. Anyway, so Dude Love, you know, he starts wrestling as this Dude Love gimmick instead of Mankind, who's like comes out in fucking tie-dye.
But he's a corporate shill at this point.
Also, he's a corporate shill, and it's ridiculous, and he dances the worst dance. So,
but it's great in how bad it is.
You're going to have to walk me through this match, though, because I don't remember. And I'm so the Cold Stooges, Steve Austin.
I don't remember which Stooge was the timekeeper and which one was the ring announcer.
Okay.
But Dude Love gets like this five paragraph long entrance.
Yeah.
And Stone Cold just gets here Stone Cold.
Right.
But Undertaker is the guest enforcer or whatever the hell they're calling it.
Okay.
But they didn't. You don't know that. There's this. For some reason, Vince put a blank line in there that someone can volunteer to be the enforcer.
All right.
So before the match starts, you hear the gong, and then you hear the pre-ministry rock.
Yeah.
Taker thing. And Taker comes out. So I'm like, well, fuck yeah, Undertaker's here. So they start to have this match. There's literally cars on the stage, because this is back when they actually had individual...
Oh, that set. I do remember that set clearly.
You had the Briscoe Brothers body shop spray painted on the cars.
Yeah.
So they're doing shit on the cars, elbows off the cars. Undertaker's doing nothing, even though he's guest enforcer.
Yeah.
It's just perfect Attitude Era bullshit.
Fucking A.
And then right at the end, the Stooges are going to interfere.
Right.
Choke slams. Stone Cold gets the win. Everybody's happy.
Right.
It's Attitude Era.
It's Attitude Era as fuck.
Yes. And that's where I grew up.
All right.
So,
fair enough. That sounds good.
And it's, you know,
and it's
Mick Foley doing shit off of cars and Stone Cold being a good base for him.
Yeah.
And Stone Cold being Stone Cold as fuck.
Stone Cold and Mick Foley always put on good matches, too. Those guys had great chemistry.
I mean, they both lay it in.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you also have Taker there being just a presence.
Just being the Undertaker.
Yes. Just being a goth presence.
Just being, like, goth fucking... That was when he was on his super, like, leather daddy phase when all of his robes looked like fucking Hellraiser outfits.
So he's just being a pre-Hot Topic presence ringside. And at the very last second, he does his gimmicks and, you know, fuck the corporation and Stone Cold awesome.
There you go.
Number 16. Shuri versus Kana / Asuka again.
It's the same people.
Yes. Different year.
What? Okay. August
11th, 2011.
All right.
From Smash, which is another company that no one cares about and no one watched and doesn't exist anymore.
All right.
It's another match that I found on the internet that no one was in the crowd for.
Okay.
It's another great match in front of nobody.
What makes this match special or stand out to you?
It's basically the same reasons as the last one, except with blood.
Oh, all right. It's just two women bloodying each other.
Yeah.
All right.
They're just fighting over a title that no one cares about from a company that no one watches.
All right.
But they're really into it.
Yeah. I mean, Asuka's fucking great, so I get it.
And also, I watched it not too long ago, so...
So it's fresh
in your
mind.
It might be fresh.
It might be recency bias.
There's always options to that.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it's wrestling. Wrestling always has recency bias. Well, not so much anymore, because it hasn't been good for 20 years, but...
Well, I just keep expanding into different spheres to...
Yeah.
To have a bias for it.
Yeah, that's fair.
Number 15. HBK versus Ric Flair, the retirement match.
Oh, yeah. It's a good match. I didn't watch it live because I was out of wrestling at the time, but I have gone back and watched it since.
And not even for the match. It's literally for that ending segment.
Yeah.
Where Shawn Michaels I love you, I'm sorry, and super kicks him and pins him.
So let me set the stage a little bit on this one. Ric Flair is maybe one of the most iconic professional wrestlers of all time. Maybe not as well known as a Hulk Hogan or a The Rock, but definitely in that echelon, I think. I mean, he's fucking Ric Flair. He's been around since the 70s, and he had been wrestling nonstop from the 70s till the mid-2000s.
And he's probably more influential on the work.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, those two together are probably the most influential people.
Inside the business, 100%. Yeah. Anyway, so they had a match at WrestleMania that was like loser leaves town, loser has to fucking retire from wrestling match, basically. And Shawn Michaels is a huge Ric Flair fan because anybody who grew up I watching mean,
look
wrestling
at how he acted
at the time. Basically, anybody who was a wrestler in the late 80s to early 90s grew up as huge Ric Flair fans because he was the icon in the 70s.
And if you didn't, for some reason, you idolized Dusty Rhodes.
Right. So, like, here's fucking Shawn Michaels having this match, and then he's going to basically end the career of one of his idols. So, yeah, he gets all teary when he's about to drop him with his finisher.
And those are the two best criers in the business.
For sure.
He's just crying. Just like, I love you. I'm sorry.
And then he kicks him right in the fucking mouth.
It's like, I love you. Fuck you. This is my business now.
It's fucking great. That's a great match.
And it's also an era where I still really loved WrestleMania.
That's fair.
Which I feel I've lost.
Yeah. I had checked out by then, unfortunately, because there was a lot of good shit. Like, there's a lot of good shit with him and with The Undertaker, especially in those years, that I missed out on, sadly. But fuck, man. There was so much of it that I just didn't care at all about. Like, you know, the Dominic paternity matches.
To be fair, I think most older wrestling fans that I've talked to have taken a break at some point.
Yeah. I mean, you got to, because it's just the same thing over and over and over.
I mean,
over
there was
over
a gap of I had too many things going on where I couldn't sit down at a TV on a Monday night.
Right. I mean, you haven't watched WWF except for WrestleMania in months.
That's also fair.
So there's that.
WrestleMania was entertaining.
It was pretty good. It was great.
Sasha Banks and Bianca were wonderful.
Didn't make me want to watch Raw the next day, though.
That actually is the major problem. It's nothing
the problem.
They did made me want to watch Raw.
Right.
All right, number 14. Suzu Suzuki versus Mai Yukiki from Yokohama Bunten last year. We've already talked about this on episode 1, but I love this match, so right. Fuck you.
All right. I don't know who any of these people are. Give me a little history on some of these people.
Well, this was Suzu's third time challenging.
Okay.
Maya held the belt for 500 and something days.
Jesus, that's a fucking title reign.
So they've built up a dominant champion.
Yeah.
She's beat this 18-year-old twice.
Yeah.
I think she was actually 17 at that point.
Yeah.
So they do all the callbacks to all the other matches. Suzu finally figured out how to, you know, wrestling logic.
Right.
I figured out how to kick out of this move, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's just dramatic.
Yeah.
They built to it. And then right about where they hit the time limit, an ice ribbon. If you hit the time limit, the belt is just vacated.
Oh, weird.
There's no champion, whatever.
That's a
neat
gimmick.
If it hits the time limit, the belt's just vacated.
Interesting.
So they teased that, it's getting close.
Yeah.
We're getting to that time limit. And then Suzu figures out how to win, and the crowd's like, oh, whoa. Okay.
All right.
And I like occasionally building somebody.
Yeah, that's fair.
Especially since we don't do it anymore.
I dig everything about that.
I'm trying to figure out what number we want to split this off at.
Obviously, do up to 11, and then we'll do the top 10 for the second half.
This is going to get real Joshi.
Yeah. Your top 10 is going to be real Joshi?
No, this next stretch is going to be real Joshi.
All right, that's fine. What are we on, 12?
13.
I thought... Oh, that was 14?
Yeah.
All right.
Manami Toyota versus Toshiya Yamada. Can't say her name.
Bro, you made this list. You should know the names.
I can't pronounce his name.
It's Sarazawa.
Actually, just say it like that. It sounds good. But it's for the IWA World title from August 15th, 1992.
Are these men or women?
Both women.
All right.
Hair versus hair.
From 1992?
Yes.
Jesus Christ, you're going way back.
I go down holes.
I guess.
This is how I fell in love with Arn Anderson.
Yeah, that's fair. That's baffling to me. You're like, Hulk Hogan is a good guy?
Yeah.
I've never heard of this.
Fuck this
good guy,
Hulk
Hogan guy. My favorite wrestler is Arn Anderson.
I do love Arn
You're
Anderson.
You're fucking crazy. I mean, I understand it completely, but fuck, man. You like missed Hulk Hogan's entire like
entire 80s heel run entire, is non-existent.
His entire 80s like fucking like the most iconic wrestling run of all time, the most crossover ignored wrestler. It. Ignored it completely. But Arn Anderson, this fucking obscure
this four horsemen.
Yeah. This obscure sidekick wrestler from the 70s.
I'm gonna watch this motherfucker.
God damn.
This is also on here. First off, they're wrestling like it's 2020 and it's 92. Yeah.
I love when you find old shit like that.
Like, they're really going at it.
Yeah.
And still being mostly safe.
Yeah.
Even though Japan has very low care for breaking each other's necks.
Right.
But the best part is, Toyota wins the match. They hand her to Clippers.
Yeah.
She's refusing to cut her hair.
Yeah.
She's crying. She's not going to do it because, you know, you don't want to be bald.
Right.
No woman wants to fucking be bald. She cries. She won't do it. The, I don't know what to call them, management.
Yeah.
Just takes the clippers out of her hands and they cut the girl's hair anyway.
Yeah.
And everybody's crying and the crowd's full of women and tears are screaming.
Yeah.
And everybody's just upset.
Yeah. But that was the match.
Yes. But I just like
How they sold it?
I like how they sold it, and I like how, even though she hated this person, she did not want to take away... It's a baby face as fuck move.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, even though we're in a blood feud,
yeah,
and I hate you,
like
I don't want to make you ugly.
This is too far.
Yes. And then the management does it anyway, like, fuck yeah, you.
That's great. That's funny.
All right. Momo Watanabe.
This is number 12.
Number 12 versus Jungle Kiona. For March 3rd, 2019, for the white belt.
And the white belt is like their intercontinental title, their mid card title.
Yes, and ironically, it also is literally white.
Yeah, I assume that they call
all IC belts should be white. That's a new edict.
I agree with that completely.
All intercontinental belts must be white.
That white strap fucking 80s intercontinental title is the best looking belt of all time.
And this was also when I first actually started getting into Joshi.
Yeah.
So it's a few that I feel like I'm up to on.
All right.
And the storyline is Momo betrayed Jungle to join EO in Queen's Quest.
Okay.
And ever since then, Jungle can never beat Momo.
All right.
So, and she fails again.
Yeah.
They build up this hype that babyface Jungle's finally going, she's finally going to win the big match. She's right. Finally going to do it. Nope.
And still loses?
Just loses.
Great.
Which partly hurts me,
yeah.
But part of me also loves it.
Yeah, that's...
Like, they're just building her up and murdering like, everybody's like, hopes and dreams.
This time I'm finally going to do... I've never been able to do it before, but this time I'm finally going to be able to do it.
I can't beat this 18-year-old, goddammit, that betrayed me, and I cried because I helped her for homework and shit.
Yeah.
I'm going to finally do it. Io's a bad influence on her. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh,
still,
I lost.
Still can't do it.
Still can't do it.
That's perfect.
Even to this day.
I love
still
that.
Still can't do it.
I love that storytelling. That's funny.
And to be fair, they did that with Tam, and she finally did get over.
Yeah.
So there's still hope out there that one day Jungle might win a singles belt.
Well, that was kind of like that match
it's on here.
On AEW.
Oh, yes. Also that.
With this one isn't on there. Mm. With fucking Hikaru Shida.
Oh, yeah, and Ryo Mizunami.
And her mentor that she could never beat and never beat and never
beat. In 10,000 years.
And finally she beat her.
Yes. Which is great, except no one told that story but me.
Also, that chick sucked. That chick was a terrible wrestler.
You want me to bring it to you? She sucked 10 years ago, too.
Yeah,
it makes you feel better.
It doesn't.
She didn't get worse. She just never was good.
Yeah, all right. All right. Let's read your number 11, and we'll split this one off.
Kazuchika Okada versus Tetsuya Naito from Wrestle Kingdom 12.
All right.
I think you actually watched this one.
Was this like...
You fell asleep during it.
That sounds right. I go over to Andy's to watch weird Japanese wrestling pay-per-views from time to time, and they're always on at like midnight, or we watch them at midnight because we watch them after work. Either way, usually by like 2.5 hours in, I'm fucking just asleep on his couch, like fucking sawing logs,
actually enjoy for some reason.
Just passed out while he's watching wrestling. And then I usually wake up for like the one or two matches that I'm actually there to see or the main event. Like, you know.
I think I've woken you up. Hey, Moxley's coming out.
Yeah, that's usually like, I'm usually just knocked the fuck out. And then he's like, oh, John Moxley's having his match. I'm like, oh, perfect. The only thing I fucking, the only wrestler on this whole pay-per-view who I know.
But it's just on here because they tried to murder each other.
Yeah.
Like most Japanese matches, there's very little storyline. It's just that they want to murder each other for the belt.
So Japanese wrestling has this thing where, like, even though it's just as staged and just as much of a work as American wrestling,
we pretend.
They like to prove how tough they are, so they, like, kind of hit each other for real for a while in
their
matches.
Which is a great gimmick for me, because as we stated, I love Arn Anderson.
Yeah. So they do this shit called Strong Style, where they, like, really lay in their clotheslines and chops and shit to show off how tough
right
they
on
are.
The borderline of
yeah
actually well some of I think the, a lot of clotheslines are just Bradshaw leg, you know?
Right,
but it's a gimmick that works for me.
Yeah, that's fine. And it's a gimmick that seems to work for Japan, so you know, good on them.
I'm not saying that they couldn't add some storyline.
All right, so
but I would like not to lose the Strong Style.
So why are these two?
I like it just because Naito is the Jungle Kiona of this, too, where he just can't beat Okada.
Okay.
And then he finally beats Okada. And right. Everybody's fine.
Everybody's
happy.
What was this match? I completely forgot. I got on a tangent.
It's for the IWGP, not world heavyweight title.
The
main belt.
Oh, I do remember this match.
Because it was like 40 minutes.
Yeah. Was this night one or night two? This was the night two main event, right?
I believe so. Yes. I want to say yes. I don't remember.
It doesn't matter. I do remember watching this match because I think this is the first time I ever saw Okada. I think I was awake for this one because it was Okada. And I'm like, oh, I've heard so much about this fucking Okada
fella. And he disappointed
fella.
You.
And I was not super impressed.
I'm still on Okada boat.
Yeah, that's fine.
I
get
like
it.
The streamer. I like the gimmick.
People are very fucking up on this Okada fella. I just, man... I'm very into American wrestling. I really need the gimmick and
the
pageantry.
I think it's the facials also.
Also, all Japanese wrestlers, like all popular Japanese wrestlers do this thing where they just make faces like they're having a stroke. And I don't understand it at all.
Everybody loves it. I hope that paper crinkling isn't come again.
It doesn't matter.
But we already had train time twice, so.
Yeah. And so that's where we're going to end episode one of this. And some indeterminate time in the future, past episode one of this, we'll put up episode two of this, which will be...
Or maybe.
Andy's.
Maybe we just won't.
Andy. Oh, we'll always... We'll put all this up eventually. And we'll do... And that was number 25 to number 11. And we'll do... Finally, the next hour will be Andy's top 10 of all time.
Just gonna leave a blank. Just gonna leave a blank.
Yeah.
Go on.
Hey, you go to the restroom. I'll pause this. All right, Andy. Back in it.
This is 2 weeks later.
This is at least 2 weeks later, maybe a month later. Fucking who knows. Whenever me and Colin take a week off again.
But I accidentally checked Twitter in between then.
Yeah.
And I think people don't like being worked anymore.
Yeah?
That's, I think, what I learned today is wrestling fans love being worked but also hate it.
Yeah, they're stupid. Welcome to part two of Andy's top 25 wrestling matches of all time. This will be his top 10.
Yeah. Ooh, I can't wait till you're going to.
But I tell you what, if we get through this top 10 and it's like all Joshi matches, so they all take like 3 minutes, I'm just going to turn this back into one episode.
Nah, there's probably some points you could talk about on here.
All right. I mean, I doubt there's anything that's going to be as great as.
I think you'll know number one already.
I mean. I don't think I will. Okay. I don't. And okay. I want to be surprised. I'm going to throw my number one favorite match of all time into this list after you're done with all yours if it's not on
here. Do you only have one?
Yeah, I just have one.
Oh, so I'm just the weirdo that makes...
I mean, I'm sure I couldn't tell you my top 25. I just know what my favorite match is. Oh, I do know what your number one is going to be.
I think you do.
Yeah. But I know I have one number one that is like just stood out to me. So anyway... With that being said, Andy, number 10.
Kazuchika Okada versus Kenny Omega. I'm ready for you to shit on this. I kind of want you to shit on this.
So just so everybody knows, Okada.
It's Wrestle Kingdom 11. I don't think you watched this one.
No, that had been the year before.
Yes, but this was prime Bullet Club Kenny.
Okay, so I definitely didn't watch it.
And it was also Okada still on his physical best. He's kind of, he starts slipping quickly.
Is Okada the one they call the Rainmaker?
Yes.
Okay.
But they're both prime. Everybody hates Kenny.
Yeah. He's Everybody a hates Kenny.
Bullet Club shithead.
And they should hate him because he sucks. Kenny's bad.
This made it all worth it.
Kenny's a bad wrestler who's bad at wrestling, and he's worse at fucking cutting promos, and everything he does is does bad, and he just makes stupid fucking faces and poses and points his stupid fucking fingers, and he fucking sucks. I hate Kenny Omega. I get it.
He's this made this list worth it right here. This rant has made all of this worth
it. He's very good at pretending to do wrestling moves. He's very good at dancing. He fucking sucks. I hate him. His personality sucks, and I hate him.
And he's just on this list because there are polar opposites.
Yeah, that's fair. And I get people like the Rainmaker.
I love the Rainmaker because it's kind of a 70s throwback in itself.
I think if
he just comes out there, looks kind of pissed off.
Yeah,
and he lariats the fuck out of people.
I think if I watch more Japanese wrestling, I'd understand him better. Or if he finally came to the WWF or AEW, I'd probably get him. I'd probably understand him.
You might get the
him.
AEW part.
Yeah. But I bet those two guys could put on...
I mean, it's 40 minutes. They do everything.
I bet those two guys could put on a hell of a show together.
Yeah, they both do everything they could have possibly did.
I might go find and watch that match. Is that the one that was like ended up being fucking Idiot's first ever six-star match?
Yes.
Yeah.
But did he not... Was Macho and Ricky Steamboat...
That would have just been
star?
No. It would have just been five because that was his thing. Is it probably wasn't even a five because he used to not even do 5 stars ever. You can't have a 5-star match, and then he started just throwing 5 stars out left and right because he's a
could
fucking
he,
idiot.
Could
Mark.
He at least be consistent?
No, he's fucking Dave Meltzer.
Besides consistently talking about Charlotte's body,
there's this guy named. There's this fucking wrestling. I don't even know what you call
him. We've talked about him before.
He sucks.
He's my nemesis and also should hire me.
Yeah.
So that I could tell him Dave to Meltzer, stop saying things.
Dave Meltzer is the Perez Hilton of fucking professional wrestling. But he's been fucking like reporting, I guess, on wrestling and rating matches. He's the fucking Leonard Maltin.
Since what?
Of professional wrestling.
Mid-80s?
His opinions are all dumb and he's dumb. And he's also a fucking
and
massive
all the boys
fucking
read
sexist.
All the boys read his letter.
And I don't understand why, because he's just always pulling shit out of his ass, and all of his stuff is stupid, and I hate him worse than Kenny Omega.
This is best rant. This is best rant in show history.
So number 10, Okada versus Kenny Omega. Yeah.
Wrestle Kingdom 11 for the IWGP heavyweight belt.
Yeah. That's a great looking belt.
Yeah, too bad they ruined it, huh?
I mean, yes. Well, that's not the one they ruined, is it?
Yeah.
Is it?
Because they combined that belt and the IC belt, and they made the Divas-looking belt out of them.
Oh, it's both of them put together?
Don't ask me why.
I thought it was like the IC and the United States title.
No. They took their secondary belt,
and
that also looked good.
With their main belt?
They took their heavyweight belt, which was a gorgeous belt.
I didn't know
And they threw
that.
Them both in the trash, and they made that ugly piece of shit.
I thought they combined their U.S. title with their IC
title. The U.S.
title
is still the U.S. title.
Oh, that's so much worse.
And now they don't have an IC title.
That's so much worse, Andy.
They don't have a secondary belt. They're trying to tell us that the Never Belt is the secondary belt, and it's not.
Oh, so they had these two beautiful fucking world titles.
80s looking belts.
They were
gorgeous.
just tons, so much metal on them. They probably weighed 100 pounds. They were ridiculous and gorgeous. And they combined them. They had a fucking combining match.
Just terrible.
A combining match.
Well, they went a whole year with people just having both of them.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
And you think you would just break them up at some point.
Right.
No.
Instead, they put them into one, but the title looks literally like the WWF Divas title, which was just a butterfly. So the belt looks like a giant gold butterfly now. It looks like shit.
It looks like shit. Ugh. And everybody is supposed to, and Twitter is having had a meltdown of arguing over if it looks like shit. And how we're not supposed to say it looks like shit.
Even though it looks like shit.
We'll learn to like it. And they're wrong.
I bet all those same people probably threw a tantrum when the fucking Universal title was originally shown about how it looked like shit. Because it really looked like shit.
Wait until we debut this ugly looking piece of shit.
Yeah. Ugh.
And they ruined two belts lineages for nothing.
That's too bad.
They could have just kept the heavyweight belt and just decided to call it the world heavyweight. Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
Dumb.
Yep.
Dumb.
Oh.
All right. Number 9.
Mayu Kiki versus Tsukasa Fujimoto from Ribbon Mania 2018. The start of the 500 and whatever day reign.
All right, so this is the chick we talked about earlier, last episode.
This is the dominant champion.
Or perhaps earlier this episode.
Perhaps either or both.
Yeah.
I don't know why both, but fuck it.
Yeah. This might all just go out as one. Who the fuck knows?
Yeah, who cares?
Yeah.
Fuck Dave Meltzer. But great match.
Yeah.
Great workers. And it started a dominant reign.
Yeah. All right.
And I just loved all of it.
That makes sense. And this is the one that went however many days until that other match.
534?
That's such a crazy fucking title run. Yeah. God damn, that's a reign.
Makes me love her even more.
Yeah.
Just like, wait, you're hot, you model, and you're a great wrestler? And they booked you great?
Wrestling needs more, like, just ridiculously long-term reigns like that.
I think that's the best part of the 70s and 80s, when people would just go on monster runs.
Yeah, like, Hulk Hogan was just always the champion.
Yes. Bruno Sammartino. Ric Flair was champion for...
ever.
Forever.
Yeah.
I think he's still fucking whatever champion.
Like, he's so fucking synonymous with the big gold belt.
I think he is still NWA champion somehow.
When he left WCW and went to WWF, he was still NWA World Heavyweight Champion and took the big gold belt with him.
Talk about another gorgeous belt.
Oh, that belt
Why'd they fuck that up?
Wonderful. I don't know, but I'm glad
I have one.
Why
can't we
have
nice belts?
Glad I have one.
Now we're on to something you can actually talk about.
All right, number eight?
Number eight, end of an era.
Well, you're going to have to say the names.
No, I wanted you to say them. Okay, Taker...
Yeah.
Triple H.
Yeah.
Mm. And our guest referee, HBK.
See, here's my problem. This goes in line with what I was talking about earlier, where it was this whole great chunk of Undertaker, WrestleMania, and Undertaker and Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania matches that I just completely...
Did you not go back and watch this?
I don't know if I've watched this one yet.
Damn it, I was hoping you'd have some feedback.
No, you're going to have to fucking do all this one, because you're going to have to...
Okay. So we're setting up that this is the end of the era, even though they're gonna all go number 10 years, and we're just not gonna talk about that.
Just ignore all the noises going on in the background of this super professional, well produced podcast out of my kitchen.
But it's got a great build up.
So I can
Hell in a Cell.
I can give a little bit of info on the build up. So there's a guy named The Undertaker we've talked about many times, and everybody should know because he's fucking one of the greatest professional wrestlers of all
time. Possibly the greatest character ever created in wrestling.
Definitely. So he, for the previous two wrestlers, so The Undertaker at this point has this gimmick. He's undefeated at WrestleMania. The Undertaker's never lost a WrestleMania match. At this point, he's probably fucking 13 or 14 and 0, like not going into this
one. I don't remember the exact number, but it's over 10.
Yeah, it's crazy amount of matches he's had at WrestleMania and never lost. So Shawn Michaels is like, I'm going to be the one to take him out. And then Undertaker
kicks. And he does it.
And he kicks his ass. And then the next year, he's like, you know what? We're going to do it again.
And he doesn't.
Yeah. Or no, and then the next year it's Triple H.
Was it two Shawn Michaels and Triple H?
I think it was one Shawn Michaels and two Triple H's.
Okay.
Either way, the point is, the first 2 years, nobody does it. And then this third year, Triple H is like, I got this figured out.
I'm better than you, HBK. I know we're best friends, but fuck you. I am the real...
Yeah.
I'm the real star here.
And he doesn't. I'm gonna put it in a Hell in the Cell. The most brutal fucking
match
in wrestling at the time.
He's
got a hammer.
I got a fucking hammer.
He's got his best friend Shawn Michaels as the special guest referee to cheat for him. He's got it all set up to beat The Undertaker. And The Undertaker
is the
fucking Undertaker. He doesn't lose at WrestleMania. Fucks them all up.
But it is a great match. The HBK cheating spot is great.
Yeah.
And then when it fails, he just goes back to being a straight referee.
Yeah.
Which is logic. If you use normal person logic, you're like, wait, why?
Why
would you just not count the three?
Yeah, but it's funnier that
way.
But
in wrestling logic, for some reason.
It makes perfect sense. You got to do your job. At the end of the day, you still got to do your job.
And there's a really, they are great to, well, Triple H is great.
Triple H.
Taker is still in shape here.
Yeah. Well, Undertaker.
This is probably my favorite version of Taker, actually.
Everybody has said that. Like, that series of matches, those 3 years of WrestleMania, and then his one with CM Punk, everybody says they're, like, Undertaker's best matches.
Like, the 90s character is what it is.
Yeah, sure.
But his actual
in-ring
is best in-ring Taker.
And Triple H can have
a monster.
Triple H can have a good fucking match with a broom.
Even though he wasn't on my favorite wrestler list because I hate him.
Yeah.
Because I'm... still a fan.
Yeah.
I'm still a Max.
Yeah.
I hope someone gets that reference out there.
I mean, nobody listens to this, but I hope so too.
I hope the other Andy gets that reference.
Yeah, that's fair. Oh yeah, other Andy will definitely. I mean, Triple H is such a good fucking wrestler. Like, he had a good match with fucking Scott Steiner somehow. You know,
he's he could have a good match with me.
He's just, yeah.
I could just walk in the fucking ring and right. fucking put on a fucking...
Like, he sold for a kid dying of cancer, and it was the most beautiful thing in the world. He's fucking great.
But I still hate him because he's a piece of shit.
No, that's fine. Triple H is amazing. So those two in the ring together is going to be gold. With Shawn Michaels there.
In the pageantry of WrestleMania in full effect. Full pyro, a 2,000-foot-long walkway for Taker to take right. 10 minutes to walk.
That's
down.
The one I'm going to go watch. Is that the one where he came out to...
He came out and the people like grabbing... It looks like the people are grabbing okay. at him.
Which one? Which WrestleMania did he come out to fucking... Goddamn, I can't remember the name of the singer. Forget it. Move
Johnny
on.
Johnny Cash?
Yes.
I can't... God damn it.
I mean, it all got caught out of the fucking network anyway, which is a bummer.
I think it was right after Cash... Ain't no, and then he came out to Ain't No Grave.
Yeah.
Which is, if you're not going to use one of the versions of the funeral dirge.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good.
Yeah. What right. a good match.
Number 7. Mankind versus The Rock.
Yeah.
Mick Foley wins his world title.
Okay, like on the Monday Night Raw?
Yep. Raw from January 4th. And this whole Raw, I've watched it at least 10 times. The whole Raw is fucking great.
Right.
But this fucking match.
Yeah.
And it's a borderline shitty match in of itself.
Right.
But all the interference, the crowd is on fire. Mick Foley is babyface as fuck.
Yeah. And you never think he's going to win a title.
Oh, God, like, no. You think
he's not the kind of guy you would ever put the belt on.
He's the ugliest motherfucker in this company.
He's kind of fat. He's wearing a mask.
He looks like a piece of shit. He's wearing a job squad shirt under his tattered fucking...
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to put the title on this asshole.
Right. To the point where... And this was a... So, in the 90s, there was this thing known as the Monday Night Wars, where WCW was just kicking the shit out of WWF in the ratings. Monday Nitro was beating Monday Night Raw consistently for, like, 2 years. And Raw's starting to get some momentum, starting to build some comeback. And then
there's a far superior show at this point.
But Raw was pre-recorded.
Yes.
And Monday Nitro was live. So somebody, I think Eric Bischoff.
Bischoff, the version I heard, Bischoff told Schiavone.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to say his name right, because fuck him.
Yeah. So somebody had the fucking brilliant idea to spoil the end of Monday Night Raw, thinking that would make nobody tune over.
Cause people put butts in seats.
Because people would swap back and forth, and the finish got out that Mick Foley was going to end up winning the world title. And so, like, halfway through Nitro, they're like, we just heard that Mick Foley is going to win the title. What a dumb idea that is. Nobody wants to see that, except for everybody fucking loved Mick Foley.
How can you not love Mick Foley?
So, like, it ended up being one of the highest rated fucking moments in Raw history, and kind of the sea change when everybody... Because your competitor is advertising your main event for you. So everybody turned the fucking channel. And
literally.
And then once that happened, everybody's like, oh, this shit is way better than what we're watching over there. And so everybody started jumping ship to watch WWF instead of WCW. And that was the beginning of the end.
And that pop when Austin's music hit, it's always big.
Yeah.
But that pop in particular, they're already on fire.
Yeah.
And then that fucking glass shatters.
Yeah.
Oh.
So good.
And just every part of this was done amazingly.
Yeah.
Except for JR not being there.
Who was Michael
Cole? Cole and King.
All right.
That was the only thing that could possibly have made this better.
Yeah.
Not current JR, but that JR back then.
Yeah.
The guy that he...
Pete Jim Ross, the guy
that he was batting for, that Vince told him, I'm going to let you hire this guy just so you know what it feels like to have your heart broken.
Yeah.
And then this motherfucker is winning the fucking world title.
Yeah, that's great. That's a feel-good story all the way around.
Yeah. And it happened in like 13 minutes, which is also great somehow.
Right.
All this magic happened.
Yeah. Man, wrestling used to be so good.
Number 6. Io Shirai versus Kairi Hojo / Sane.
Yeah.
Io has a red belt. Kairi has a white belt. But they're not for some goofy reason, they're not combining the belts. They're just having a fucking match.
Yeah.
For March 20th, 2017. I just like, just fucking good match.
Yeah.
I got nothing.
All right.
I love EO. Love Kyrie.
They're two great fucking wrestlers. I mean, I only know them from their American work, obviously, but Io Shirai is fucking great.
And this is a point where Io is turning heel.
Yeah.
Now, the heel turn fails.
Yeah.
It's like the Austin heel turn. No one was going to boo Io.
Right.
So, but she was healing it up and getting cheered the whole time.
Yeah, but it's fun to watch people you like be shitty people.
She's being shitty to Kairi Sane, who is just wants to be this lovable pirate and just be friends.
Also, Kairi Sane is maybe the most adorable fucking lady wrestler in the history of lady wrestling. She dresses up like this weird like fucking steampunk pirate, and she's just cute as a button. But also, she's great in the ring.
And her friend is just being a piece of shit to her.
Yeah.
And it's not really explained yet.
Yeah.
Like, she hasn't properly turned yet, but she's just kind of being a prick. She's
being an asshole.
And Kyrie's like, why don't you love me?
That's funny.
All right, number five. Now, this one is probably recency biased.
Yeah.
It'll probably go down at some point.
All right.
But Julia versus Tam Nakano for the white belt this year.
I mean, you do love this Julia chick.
I love both these. And it's a hair versus hair again.
Oh, shit. It's a hair versus hair and for a title?
Hair versus hair for the white belt.
Goddamn.
At the Budokan in the biggest building they've ever run. And I'm not sure about biggest crowd because of Corona.
Yeah. So what?
But it's the biggest angle that they've probably run in the biggest building they've run. And it had heat.
All right. So what led them to being so angry that they're fighting over titles and hair?
Well, we spent a year. Well, to go back all the way, Tam had never had a singles belt in her 10 years of wrestling. Okay. She's always been a sidekick or a second or a bridesmaid.
Yeah.
So they built a story of she can't actually win a belt.
Yeah.
And to work on top of that, her best friend had to retire. And she vowed to her best friend, I'm going to win that white belt that you had to give up.
Yeah.
And she spent a whole year failing.
All right.
And Julia spent a whole year kicking her ass.
Nice.
Over and over and over and over.
Yeah.
And telling her she can't win.
Yeah.
And the build up to it, Julia's like, fine. I've beaten you. I'll beat you again. But you have to put up something.
Got it.
And Tam's gimmick is that she's pretty.
Okay.
Her gimmick is that she essentially wants to be her gimmick is that she's an idol, whatever.
Yeah. This seems like a lot of Japanese chicks' gimmick.
A lot of them actually were idols and actresses.
All right. That makes
Hikaru
sense.
Shida was an actress. On a side note, Shida became a wrestler because she got booked into being a wrestler in a movie.
Oh, that's funny.
And then she was like, wait, I'm just going to wrestle.
I'm like, I'm really good at this.
Yes.
All right. Fair enough. So she's like David Arquette, except good.
Except actually can wrestle. And doesn't do death matches with fucking Joey Janela.
Doesn't win the WCW world title in the fucking dumbest decision in the history of fucking booking.
The match, they go all out. There's a table, a fucking pile driver on the table.
Yeah.
They do everything. And Tam finally figures out how to win.
Nice.
And everybody's crying.
She wins. Oh, beautiful.
They finally, after a year of getting her ass kicked, she finally wins.
Did they shave Julia's head?
They did a callback to the Minami Toyota spot where Tam would not do it.
Ah.
So I enjoyed the callback.
Right.
I'm like, oh, I like that. The only downside of the match is I think they were out of time.
Yeah.
So they just kind of shitty shaved her head and then did the rest backstage.
Got
That's
it.
My side note is they just did like a couple. This is a podcast. You can't see it. But they just kind of gave her a haircut like me.
Yeah.
And then they properly shaved it back.
But they did end up shaving her head.
Yeah, she's still, right now her hair is about the same as mine.
All right.
Which there's no reference of time on here, but whatever.
Yeah. Andy's got a buzz cut for everybody. Imagine just like probably number one? It's number two probably.
Two on top, one on the side.
There you go. Everybody knows what that means.
Yeah.
Number four. Wait, number Yeah, number four.
Number four. Unless you want to talk about hair some more.
No. No. Trains.
We had train time. We had dog barking. Yeah. We're going to talk about haircuts. It's a great podcast. Number four, Undertaker versus Edge, Hell in a Cell, SummerSlam 08. I think you've actually watched this. I don't know if you remember, because we've talked about the ending before.
Okay. I don't remember it at all.
Well, the ending is where Taker goes up the ramp. He sees Edge moving. He turns around, walks back, and slams him through the ring and does like the Jimi Hendrix flame spot.
Okay.
Where the flames shoot through where he chokeslammed Edge through the ring.
Nice. I love that. I'm not a big Edge fan. He's fine. I loved Edge and Christian.
I think I should be an Edge fan more.
Yeah.
Just because of his feud with Taker.
Yeah. I loved him. I loved his tag team. I loved Edge and Christian as a tag team. Edge's solo shit never really did much for me.
Is it because you love the tag team so much that...
No, I just don't.
Okay.
I just... His whole R-rated superstar, I'm a bad boy. Like,
Felt like a retread of HBK, but not as good.
Yeah, he was edgy at a time when the company was declining on its edge, and so he wasn't as edgy as DX ever was.
Was he edgy? Because this was also the same time when Vince McMahon said the N-word to Booker T.
I mean, his name was Edge.
But this is also the same time where Vince McMahon said the N-word to Booker T.
That's my point. His name was Edge, and he called himself the R-rated superstar, and he fucked like some dude's girlfriend in the middle of the ring.
Yeah, they did the live sex angle with Lita in the middle of the ring.
But I'm just like,
which, good choice if you're going to do that angle.
Sure, but I'm just, I don't know, man. I never bought in on his shtick.
Apparently, I didn't either.
Yeah.
But his work of Undertaker...
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's Edge is marvelous as a wrestler. He's great in the ring.
And
he cuts promos good. He just didn't work for me.
And Taker had chemistry.
I bet.
Like, and I like the match because they do all the callbacks of what Edge had done to Taker for the months preceding.
Yeah.
Like the concerto.
Yeah.
On the steps.
Concerto, for people who don't know, is you stack a guy's head. Basically, it starts off with two people hitting you. Like a cymbal on the head with chairs.
If you're doing it solo, you just lay a chair on the mat and the guy puts his head on it and you hopefully don't actually just blast him in the head of the other chair.
Basically like if you ever seen in a cartoon where somebody slams cymbals on both sides of your head, it's that with steel chairs. That's a concerto.
And they do the camera spot. They grab the cameraman's camera and he rams Edge's head. They just do a bunch of callbacks.
All right.
And halfway through the match, Taker's getting beat down.
Yeah.
Oh my God, this might be the WrestleMania.
Yeah.
This might be the time where he just regenerates.
Yeah, I mean, he's the Undertaker.
And he just snaps and goes full Undertaker and just...
Love it.
Does the God gimmick where he does everything that Edge had done to him back.
Nice.
And then after he wins the match, he goes back down there.
Choke slams him through the ring.
Choke slams him through the ring and fire comes out.
What a great spot. I love Undertaker coming out of the ring or putting people into the ring spots. They're my favorite.
Unfortunately, now I think it's ruined.
I mean, what are you going to do?
Because the Fiend does it, but I feel like you just can't get the same pop now.
Yeah.
Well, now you can't get a pop at all. There's no people.
Well, also, everybody knows too much. It's not... The magic's gone. Number three?
Number three.
This is definitely just going to go out as one episode.
Okay.
I thought we would take longer on these top 10.
There's a lot of Japanese things on here.
Yeah.
But not enough for the Japanese people to be happy. And
it's all right.
Too much for the...
It's all right. I thought we would end up doing a whole nother hour, but we're only going to be doing about another half hour. So we'll be able to knock it out. We're good.
Momo Watanabe versus Io Shirai for the white belt. February 18th, 2018.
All right. We've talked about both of these women many a time now.
And we're going to one more time.
That's fine.
Because they're two of my absolute favorites.
That's fair. What's the story behind this match? Paint me a picture,
okay.
Andy.
So Io, full heel turn. She has created Queen's Quest.
Queen's Quest is like a staple?
Have we never talked about Queen's Quest?
No.
All right. It's the second faction in Stardom.
Okay.
It was supposed to be a heel unit that never stuck his heels.
I mean...
But it was Io picking up protégés and breaking... It was basically Io breaking up tag teams and taking the younger member as a protégé of hers.
Okay. I like this gimmick.
And... The gimmick is supposed to be that she's corrupting them, but everybody loves Io.
Yeah.
So she's just making them better.
Yeah. All right.
But part of the unit's gimmick is that when one person wins a belt, the other people in the unit will challenge for the belt.
Because, so they all fight each other.
Well, Io wants... Io said Io's thing is the strongest woman should have the all top right. belt.
So she like...
So she can't... If you can't defend the belt, you shouldn't have the belt.
That's fair. So I like that as a staple kind of gimmick.
Yeah, it's kind of a... I'm not sure what the word I'm looking for is. A alpha male, female?
Yeah, yeah. That's fucking great.
It's like hyper-competitive.
That is an awesome... That's actually a really fucking great idea for a stable. And I it like
still
it
goes
a lot.
To this day. Nice. Whenever one of them wins a single belt, every single one of them will challenge for the belt.
And the stable is still around.
Yes.
Nice.
But this is Momo trying to win the white belt.
Okay.
And she can't.
All right.
Because Io is better.
Right.
And I believe Momo broke her nose in this.
Mm.
They got a little too strong style.
Sure.
That'll but happen. The blood helps.
Always.
It looks fabulous. It's right about, I think, 20 minutes.
Nice.
So it hits a lot of action. They actually sell enough.
Yeah.
And it hits that 20 minutes, and Momo loses, and everybody's like, well, yeah, of course she lost. You know, yeah.
Fucking A.
But this leads into the next match.
All right, number two.
Momo Watanabe versus Io Shirai again. For May 23rd, 2018.
All right, and why are they fighting this time?
Okay. Because Momo won Cinderella. Okay. All right. Every year, Stardom has what used to be a one-day tournament.
All right.
It's called the Cinderella Tournament.
Okay.
If you win it, you get a gown and a tiara, and you get a wish.
All right.
And since it's wrestling, obviously, it's...
It's always a title match.
For... So after losing and possibly breaking her nose and being... The child that can't beat Io.
Right.
She wins it. She challenges. And she goes and takes the belt.
Nice. So it's basically like the fucking comeuppance for that
it's
previous match.
It's the comeuppance of a couple months of...
Yeah.
You're really good, but you're not as good as me.
Yeah, you're really good, but you're not me. That's...
And this is also... I forgot what WWE called that women's tournament they did. Where they brought in talent from the whole world.
Oh, fuck. I know
but
what you're
Kyrie
talking about.
But Kyrie had already signed. And Io did that tournament and was going to sign. And she couldn't. She had to get surgery for something.
Yeah. Wasn't it the Mae Young Invitational?
Mae Young or something. Yeah, I think it was Mae Young. So Io went back.
Yeah.
And this is right before Io leaves for the last time.
Yeah.
Before coming I don't know to if WWF? Anybody, I don't know if anybody actually knew that.
Yeah.
So it's a good ending for Io.
It's a good way for her to go out and put her protege over.
Yep.
Yeah.
So Momo finally does it. Everybody's behind it.
Fuck yeah. I bet the fucking pop was through the roof.
As through the roof as a Japanese crowd at Korakuen Hall gets.
So it's like...
You know.
Just a polite golf clap.
It was more than a polite golf clap, but it was definitely not an American crowd.
Yeah.
But everybody got the ending. And they made a main event person.
Yeah, awesome.
And then Io left and everybody cried.
All right. Little bit of build up here because I have a prediction for what your number one is going to be, Andy. But before you talk about your number one, I'm going to talk about my favorite professional wrestling match of all time. I'm going to do a little intermission from your list to do my one that I want to throw in here. I believe the year is 2001. The participants are... It's King of the Ring.
Mm-hmm.
The participants are Kurt Angle and Shane McMahon. Oh. In one of the most violent, fucking brutal, botched, just savage-looking two motherfuckers who are legitimately injured and carrying on for 20 minutes. Now, keep in mind... Kurt Angle's already wrestled twice this night because he was in the King of the Ring tournament as well.
Because that's how the tournament's supposed to work.
Yeah. So this is his third match. And this isn't related to the King of the Ring tournament. This is just a fucking grudge match he's having against Shane McMahon in addition to having been in the King of the Ring tournament that night. And it's a falls count anywhere, no holds barred, fucking hardcore, we're going to kick the shit out of each other match, which Shane McMahon is kind of known for doing crazy spots. That's his gimmick. He's literally... Well,
his gimmick is just that he's trying to win his father's love by being Mankind.
Exactly. Shane McMahon is the owner, Vince McMahon's son, Vince McMahon, owner of the World Wrestling Federation, or World Wrestling Entertainment, whatever you want to call it. His son, Shane McMahon, is a fucking nut job. He'll do anything. He'll fall off any height. He'll jump. He'll do fucking elbow drops off the 30-foot Hell in the Cells.
He'll go through any pane of glass.
Yeah. So he's fighting Kurt Angle, who is the best pure athlete in the history of professional wrestling. I mean, he's legitimately an Olympic gold medal wrestler.
And unfortunately, he spent most of his career in TNA where no one was watching.
But the guy's a genius. Like, he's fucking brilliant in the ring. Fantastic
worker and athlete.
Brilliant on the mic. He's all around probably...
And he picked up this game really quickly.
Yeah. And so him and Shane McMahon are having this fucking match. And... they're beating the shit out of each other. They work their way up the ramp to the stage. And the set for this is like this series of glass panes that say King of the Ring on them. And he grabs Shane McMahon to do a belly-to-belly suplex through the glass, throws him into the glass, thump, the glass doesn't shatter. Shane McMahon comes right down on top of his head onto the concrete floor because there's no fucking padding or anything up there. It's just the set on concrete.
This is Attitude Era steel Titantron ramp.
And they're not even on the ramp. This is just all concrete. There was no ramp. There was no ramp. It was just the concrete fucking floor of the arena. Thunk. You hear his head thunk onto the concrete. Fucking Kurt Angle rolls over. He's like, oh shit, I just murdered the boss's son. Like, you can see him kind of whispering into his ear like, and then clearly Shane McMahon's like, fuck it. Do it again. Does it again. Still doesn't break. Drops him on his head a second fucking time. Does it a third time, and finally the glass shatters. They keep fighting inside the ramp underneath. Tries to throw him back out through the glass. Again, it doesn't break. And so he just fucking like throws him through the glass like just a nice fucking Irish whip. Because they're like, we're not doing that anymore. A little later on, Shane McMahon does some spot to Kurt Angle and drops him on a fucking railing or some shit. Fucking breaks Kurt Angle's hip. So now these guys are wrestling this match. Shane definitely has a concussion, probably a broken neck.
Probably.
Fucking
Kurt Angle has a broken fucking hip.
And they go another few minutes in this match, really just laying it in. Just a beautiful fucking, just a fucking savage bloodbath, man. But it's such a good fucking match from two amazing fucking just great athletes who fucking are just great at putting on a match. Super good. Fucking, I've always loved that match. Don't know why.
I'm surprised it's not something from the early 90s or 80s.
I mean, yeah, there's lots of other matches I love, but that one has always stood out. Like, this is amazing. Just... I think part of the reason I appreciate it so much is because Kurt Angle's a legitimate athlete. He's a legitimate gold medalist. He doesn't need to be in this business, but he fucking loved it. He picked it up. And Shane McMahon's a billionaire trust fund baby.
Literally.
He never has to work a real job a day in his life. Mm-hmm. He definitely doesn't have to be a fucking professional stuntman in one of the most dangerous businesses in the world. There's no reason for that.
Oh, we know there's a reason.
And both of these men just... left it all in the ring, fucking went to the ends of the earth to entertain, and I've always really just fucking, goddamn you guys. You didn't have to do any of that, and you fucking put it out there, and I love that match for that reason.
I guess I like that there's a similar reason why your favorite match is...
Yes. So that leads us right into our Andy's number one favorite match of all time.
Undertaker versus Mankind, Hell in a Cell.
1998. The craziest fucking match you might ever see in your life, even compared to the Mick Foley match you might have watched earlier on this list.
Somehow it's more gruesome.
Yeah.
It's not, and it's also somehow more gruesome.
All right, so to set it up, the Hell in the Cell is similar to a steel cage, except for it goes outside of the ring, so you can still get to round to the outside of the ring. It's about 20 feet tall. It's just...
And I believe this is the second only?
Yes.
Yes. The first one is HBK and
Undertaker.
Yes.
So the structure is basically a giant, imagine a dog kennel, just a giant fenced in, imagine kids in cages
it's
like
literally
you've been seen
just
on the news.
A cyclone normal fence.
Yeah, it's just 20 foot structure of chain link fence that goes around the whole ring. It's just a big box.
It's a big box. So what's the first thing we do? We go on top of this big box.
So for some reason, both of these fucking, you know, 300-pound, 6.5-foot-tall professional wrestlers climb up to the top of this fucking cage, and they're fighting
on top of fence.
20 feet in the air, just walking on chain link fence.
How could anything go wrong?
And Mankind's already crazy. Already does things that no human being should do. So they're fighting near the edge, and you're like, oh, no, don't. Undertaker choke slams him off the edge of the Hell in a Cell through the announce table, 20 feet down to the ground, where all there is between him and the ground is a collapsing table and about 2 inches of rubber wrestling mat.
And let's not forget the legit guardrail.
Yeah. And
this
then
is, this isn't foam guardrail. This is legit.
No, these are just metal fucking shitty.
And he is not far from hitting that guardrail.
Right. So just tumbles 20 feet, breaks this table, and smacks into basically right into the concrete.
And we can't not put over JR calling this.
Yeah. This is where
JR literally thinks this guy is dead.
By God, he broke him in half.
Stop the goddamn match.
Yeah.
He's just...
like, it's insane. And so you think that's the match. Like, oh,
fuck. I gotta specify, this is the first time we've seen this. They've done this gimmick and it's been played out.
Right. Well, and every time they've done since then, they've set up crash pads or safened it up.
Or the table looks extra gimmicky.
Yeah,
or
but this time, it's just...
it's the regular table you've seen every week.
Yeah. So you think this is going to be the end.
No.
But no, because Mick Foley's a fucking insane person.
If any other person did this, you'd be like, you know what, I'm done.
Yeah, that'd be the match. Like, and it'd be fine. Like, holy shit, what a crazy spot.
And it would be.
And that's all you needed to do.
But we're not. This is not a normal person, and we're
Mick
not
Foley
doing that.
Climbs back up to the top of the Hell in the Cell where the Undertaker is waiting, and they're fighting, and they're fighting, and then the Undertaker goes to choke slam this 300-pound man onto this giant
onto fence
chain link fence panel.
I just want you to imagine your fence and a 300-pound guy,
yeah,
being choke slammed on it. Guess what happens?
Totally unplanned. For some reason, they didn't see this coming at all. The panel gives way and falls out, and Mankind goes right through the panel.
Right onto the mat.
20 feet into the middle of the ring.
Which at that point, I don't know is any better than the table.
It's not. It's, I mean,
you
it's
hear
better
him
than the
splat.
It's better than the concrete floor. I guess there's about 5 feet less that he had to fall.
But you hear the thud of his
but
body.
Fuck,
just
he just hits hard.
And you think that's going to be the end of the match. And you're wrong.
He crawls to a corner and he starts trying to... he's got a tooth in his nose. Literally, like, one of his
smiling,
teeth popped out.
Tooth in his nose.
He's got a hole in his lower lip and he's, like, smiling, trying to stick his tongue through the hole in his bottom lip. Just fucking destroyed.
Just prime Mick Foley.
And then they keep on wrestling.
And Taker climbs down the broken panel, and they keep going. And then Mick Foley gets thumbtacks out.
Yeah. Oh, God.
He's not,
they did a thumbtack spot in that match,
because he's not
too
bleeding enough.
Holy shit. So a thumbtack spot, for people who don't watch regular wrestling, they have a bag full of literally 10,000 thumbtacks, and they just pour them into the ring and then get body slammed or choke slammed into a pile of thumbtacks.
Yeah, there's thumbtacks under every wrestling ring.
Yeah.
It's a rule.
It's insane.
But yes, he's just not bleeding enough.
Yeah.
He needs to get choke slammed onto
some
thumbtacks.
Oh, my God. What a crazy fucking match.
And then tombstoned.
Yeah.
And then he can finally end the match.
And he can finally fucking end this match. This poor man.
It got Mick Foley over.
It got Mick Foley way over.
It got them both over.
It's probably the most fucking famous individual wrestling match of all time. Like, everybody
is it,
knows.
Is it more famous than Hogan body slamming Andre?
Maybe not, but it's goddamn close. Like, there's a guy on Reddit whose entire gimmick is he goes in and starts posting comments, and they're like, you know, just telling a story, blah, 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 blah. And then I go into the store and like, da, 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 da. And then in 1998, The Undertaker chokeslam Mick Foley off the Hell in the Cell. Like, he builds it up and builds it up, and then it always just ends with that sentence. And it's funny every time. And it's just one of the most iconic wrestling matches in the history of the sport. It made two men.
And I was a child.
Yeah. I was 18 years old and I fucking loved it.
It's just iconic, and it's in my head.
It's fucking insane. It's unbelievable that Mick Foley survived it.
And kept wrestling for multiple years.
Yeah. That he's not a cripple.
And he can still kind of walk.
He can walk fine, and he's like, doesn't seem to be in an excruciating amount of pain. As far as older wrestler goes, he's really upbeat and not a drug addict.
Somehow he's the nicest guy who has done the worst things.
Yeah. It's a fucking crazy match.
I got nothing else to add.
Yeah.
It's a crazy match. Everybody should watch it.
That's all I got to say.
Even
about
not
that.
Wrestling fans.
Yeah, everybody should go everybody watch should that watch match this. To understand why people love wrestling. Like, because this is just unadulterated violence.
It is fake, but somehow the least fake thing.
Yeah. It's brilliant.
And hey, you made two people. And Mick Foley's a god.
Mick Foley is a fucking legend.